Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Come on, Jimmy, let's start the show. The game six starts in over an hour. Let's go. Come on.
Hi, everybody. That, of course, is Russ Cortinel. I'm Jungle Jim Jerome, whipping through another show of The Suspendables. We come at you each and every week. Good to have you aboard, as they say. Rusty, that's funny. It's the week of the Stanley Cup Final, and we're going to talk about that today on the show. It's been great. Dallas is hanging in there, Russ. Down 3-1, and they win game five to go 3-2. I want to talk about who deserves to win the Stanley Cup, Rusty. Every year, right, you'll hear people weigh in go, you know what, that guy deserves to win. I got two guys, Russ, that I looked into today that absolutely deserve to win the Stanley Cup more than anybody. More than anybody, hands down. We're going to talk about that. We got our famous... We started a couple of weeks ago, so now it's famous, Rusty. Where are they now? I send you what I do is I send Russ a few rosters from his past. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing fine till I met you about not relapsing. I'm kidding. 10 years now, Rusty. Actually, yeah, clean and sober.
Good for you.
We're gonna talk about. Captains, Rusty, I want to find out, the guys wearing the C, there's guys wearing the A's. What do they do? What do the captains do on the team? And also, I want to ask you about, in your day, there was like one coach behind the bench, maybe two, and now there's 50 guys behind the bench. There's 40 guys up in the rafters. I want to find out, Russ, what are all these guys doing? Obviously, coaching has changed for you over the years. And the other one, Russ, maybe we'll start it off. By the way, before we do, you can email us. TheSuspendables@yahoo.com. You've got a little Instagram site, Russ, under The Suspendables.
Yeah.
If you want to buy some stuff, okay, which people are doing. I finally cleaned up a couple orders, Russ, that I got mad. thanks to David, who's been waiting patiently. But go to our Facebook page, The Suspendables, and there's a Shop Now button, and there's all kinds of cool stuff on there. As you know, Russ, sent you along a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So you can do that. Rusty, also, I'm prostituting myself this week, Russ.
Okay? This week? Oh, fuck. Let us know when you stop prostituting yourself.
Yeah, okay. Jesus. My nephew, Rusty, I had a flood in my house, and I had to get a bunch of work done, and they had to hold it up for 3 weeks to test for mold and spores and all that stuff. I said, oh, my God, you're going to find a lot, which it was all okay. So I got some new carpet, Russ. The guy's the big fan of the show. So I got a deal.
Ooh.
If I mention them on the show. And it's my nephew, Danny. So anyway, I said, I got to give him a shout out there at InStock Flooring here in Edmonton. They just started a big grand opening, a cash and carry thing. And I got a nice deal, Russ, on my carpet.
Jeez.
But they're really good. So you can go in there. This may be over, but I think there's still a chance to win $1,000. InStock Flooring here in Edmonton, so go see them. And I love my nephew, and he loves the show. Rusty loves the show. Anyway, perfect. they got the sale on, 20% off. Go see them in Edmonton, 11577 149th Street. There we go, Russ. I just paid for half of my carpet.
Well, and tell the guy when he comes over to test for mold that goldish brown film on your ceiling is from smoke, secondhand smoke, not mold. The black stuff around the carpet area might be mold, but the goldy brown fume stinking apartment is just you smoking 42 packages per day.
Now, one of my mentors who helps me with the show.
Oh, poor Tip.
I got a guy I lean on. You know, he said, listen, he called me. He said, I've been listening to the show. I'm going to help you. Okay. 8 minutes. 8 minutes, Jimmy. Okay, you babbling on too long before you get to the topics. And I said, I try, but Russ always brings up this stuff about my about my smoking and stuff.
Anyway. And you live alone and you're bored. I live alone.
I'll tell you a small story. So when I got kicked out of my house 10 years ago, I had to buy a place, and I went and bought this place that I saw like 30 years ago. I was driving by, and I'm going, it was a townhouse complex. I was in there. Lumber and Doug Hicks, right? Doug was the first captain of the Oilers there, I think. They lived together, and I was at a party at their place like in the mid-80s, you know? And I couldn't remember it, of course. So I ended up buying this place, and I was renovating, and they peeled the carpet back, and it said Dave Lumley order. I ended up buying the identical place, Russ.
The same place you passed out in.
Exactly. I called Lumber, and he said, "Oh my God, if those walls could talk, if those walls could talk." So let's move along with the show, Russ. My two guys. And you kind of got me onto this, so I think are the most deserving fellas to win the Stanley Cup, hands down. And I've looked at all the rosters, okay, both, and I've looked at all the players, and, you know, even I saw a bunch of stuff about, you know, Corey Perry, been around 100 years, you know, maybe this guy deserves to win. Rusty, the two coaches, okay, John Cooper and Rick Bowness. So I had a look at sort of their backgrounds, okay. And you told me about Cooper, how interesting he is.
Yeah.
So listen to this story, okay? He's 53 years old. He's from Prince George, okay? And he went to Wilcox like you did. He played at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
He's your age? Where are you?
He's same age as my younger brother, Bruce, and I went to his graduation.
Oh,
so
you
did? My brother and Coop graduated together, and I that's where I first met Coop, was way back when, at his graduation at Wilcox, Saskatchewan, in Notre Dame.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, he got a business degree, okay, at college. He was a fantastic lacrosse player, okay, John Cooper. He got 75 goals one year. And then he goes on, Russ, okay, if that's not cool enough that he got this degree, he got a law degree.
Mm-hmm.
In Lansing, in Michigan. And he was a public defender for 11 years, this guy. He coached in the North American Hockey League for 5 years, 3 years in the United States Hockey League. He was hired by Tampa in 2010, and he ended up coaching their the farm team, Norfolk. He won a Calder Cup in 2011. He set a record, 28 games in a row they won. Head coach of the Syracuse Crunch. These are teams I'd never even heard of. And then he got the head job in Tampa in 2013. 2016, he was an assistant coach with Team North America for the World Cup of Hockey. And in the IIHF, the World Championships, he was the head coach in 2017. You talk about earn your stripes, Rusty.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful story.
It's an unbelievable story.
It's a movie, actually. Even if he doesn't win the cup, it's a movie of how he became a coach and started coaching kids while he was a prosecutor. The judge called him to the bench and asked him to coach his kid.
Right.
And he did that and then loved it and came home one day, told Jess, his wife, "I think I want to do this. I really want to take this seriously and do it." And she said, yeah, you're doing a great job. He goes, "No, I mean, I want to quit what I'm doing and I want to do this full time." And Jess is a lawyer herself, his wife.
Yeah.
And she gave him the green light and he quit his job and started coaching and we're seeing history. I mean, he's won at every level.
Yeah.
Kelly Chase hired him in the North American Hockey League, I think. And
yes.
And then... asked when he was winning there, he asked Edmonton to interview him, which I think they did, but he got hired by Tampa. And Stevie Yzerman, when he hired him, everybody's like, "Oh my God, who is this guy? He never played past midget hockey or junior B hockey." And then here he is in the Stanley Cup, potentially
really
going to win.
Yeah, the really odd thing about it, and when you say it's a movie, for sure it is. You know, imagine a guy getting a couple of degrees, business and law, and then this illustrious
grinding career as a coach, right?
Yeah.
You've always said, Russ, that it ain't no fun, you know, coaching in the minors, you know, riding buses and shit like that. What's really outstanding about this guy, Russ, is he played very little hockey.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing. Didn't.
Like at any level to speak of, you know, which is crazy. And the other guy is Rick Bowness, of course, who's coaching for Dallas. He's my other pick, you know, for guys who deserve to win, who've put the freaking time in.
Coached in 5 decades, right?
40 freaking years almost. This guy's coached. You always hear players maybe like yourself, you know, who deserved everything you got right in your career. You played a long time. But I can't imagine what it's going to mean for one of these guys, whoever hoists the cup when the final whistle blows. Just incredible, incredible stories, Russ, the two of them, how hard they were.
It's going to be exciting for either one of them. Tampa Bay, you know, Coop and Tyler Johnson, both members here at Gauzer. And I was at the last game. I was in Coeur d'Alene watching Lawton play. They put together a 3-day weekend of games for the local hockey players and Spokane players. Right. And the kid from the Edmonton Oilers was out there playing, a kid from the Calgary Flames, a bunch of junior kids, college kids. It was really good. And there was tons of fans there watching. And I kept looking over my shoulder watching the TV, and Tyler Johnson had a chance in overtime to win it. The goalie made a great save. And then, of course, Dallas wins. So now we've got game 6.
Yeah.
And just everybody on both teams. I mean, I've been there, didn't win, but I know the feeling of that, you know, trying to continue on when you're down or when you're up a game and you're hoping to finish them off in a couple games. And so, you know, we got Tampa with one game they got to win one game to win the cup, and Dallas has to win too. So it's super exciting. Both coaches, all the players, I mean, right. All the history of they, you know, everybody's got a story, right? Every player on the ice has a story, and some, I don't know how many of the players have won. I don't think a lot on the ice. I think there's 2 Stanley Cup winners playing right now. There might be more, but
I don't know. Yeah.
Super exciting. So we got Maroon, who won last year in St. Louis, playing for Tampa.
Yeah. How's and he then, doing so far? With his last years?
He's doing great. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
I know.
Doing great.
Yeah.
No, he's doing great. Who's the kid who scored I call him a kid, but he's a veteran. He scored the overtime winner.
Did Corey Perry?
Yeah, Perry, and he won a cup in Anaheim already. Anaheim, so, anyways, all good. A lot of good stories.
One of my favorite stories. One of my favorite scenes. When guys are asked, you know, it's so tough in interviews because you know they're under the gun and the camera's on. So I don't think you always get the right answer, but you do get it off camera a little bit. But one of the ones I loved when the Oilers won the cup, and as soon as the final horn went, you know, Marty McSorley like sprinted off the end of the ice, like where the Zamboni is. You know, most guys are freaking out at the center ice, right? And he sprinted off there and was like, where's he going? And came walking back on with his father on his arm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it was just like, when I talked to him after, I'm like, he goes, I wanted him to be a part, not only be a part of it, like every player, but right from the second.
Yeah, yeah. Good for Marty. Good for Marty. I talked to Marty today, actually.
And how's Martin doing?
He's doing good. He might fly up to Gauzer with a friend who's interested in buying something up here. So they're going to come a week today.
Cool.
I haven't heard from Marty in a while, but, you know, Marty hasn't changed a bit. And, you know, upbeat and just full of energy. And
beautifully outspoken, man, about
hockey. My God.
Like, he's got so, something to say all the time, man. It's
he's
great.
He's so funny. Yeah, yeah. He's got a lot of funny stuff to say.
He does.
He's got a bit of Brett Hull in him.
For
he's
sure.
He's got a bit of Brett Hull in him, yeah. But anyways, he's good.
And not only that, you're funny. Brett Hull's funny. Gretz is funny. Marty is drop dead funny.
Oh, God.
Marty's so fast, so quick-witted. Anyway, I was thinking, you know, when we talk about these two coaches, what it's going to mean, and, you know, to ask these guys, what does it mean? What I want to ask you, Russ, is the, you know, probably the biggest series for you was going to the final, right? When you won the semifinal.
Yeah.
To go play in the final. Can you remember, Russ, what immediately was going through your mind? What you thought of right away or in the next minute or two?
Well, we were such a good team that it was meant to be. Calgary and Montreal that year were the two best teams by far. And so right. I always told people I went from Toronto to Montreal, and when I would go to the rink every night, it wasn't whether we were going to win or lose. It was how much we were going to win by. I mean, that was the confidence we had. It was unbelievable.
Right.
Oh, frick. It was unbelievable. And when we lost a game, it was like, what? What just happened? and it was it was that feeling. So when to get to the final was just like, okay, we're here. We're supposed to be here. And now it starts. And so we swept Hartford.
Right.
We beat Boston in five. We beat Philly in six. And Philly had a good team. They had Kerr and they had Hextall in net. Sure. And
Prop, probably was he there, Prop. Prop.
Yeah. Chelly knocked out Prop in game one, I think, with a beautiful elbow to the chops. Oh, yeah. Anyways, we won all three series, and never in I don't think anyone in our room had a doubt we were going to not, you know, there was no doubt we were going to win all three series. It would have been a total upset if we had lost to go to the final.
We were that good.
Yeah. We were that good, and we had Calgary down 2-1. We lost 4-2, and if, you know, it sucks when you get there that close,
right?
And you're two wins away, and you can just taste it and feel it, and the energy, and everybody is. I mean, I couldn't sleep the last.
Did you get distracted, Russ? Like what, like during those games, going, "Oh my God, this I might win a Stanley Cup here." Jesus,
not when I think all the distractions when you're not playing, all those thoughts and feelings of okay, you know, what are you gonna, you know, what's it gonna be like? What, you know, oh my God, I'm here, I'm gonna win, or potentially gonna win. And then when you're playing, that's when you know you're at ease. When you're playing, that's when everybody is. They put everything out of their mind, and then you're just focusing on the game, and there's no distractions at all, and it's beautiful. But the 20, you know, say a game takes 3 hours to play, the 21 hours that you're not playing is like, oh my gosh, here we go. You know, you start thinking of the parade. You start thinking about what you're going to do with the cup. You start thinking about your family. There was no cash. Like, really? There's no money. There was no money. You don't think of the cash because, I mean, there's a bonus, but nothing crazy. Right. I don't know what the players get today, but the money, if you're thinking about the money, you're
toast.
Offside. Yeah. I think that's the great thing about the NHL is that the players have all made their salaries, and then there's a set bonus, and they divide it up. But you weren't playing for the money,
right?
For sure, it helped you down the road if you win with your negotiations for. And once you've won a Stanley Cup, there's definitely money added to your salary because of that experience that teams want, especially if you get traded or you're a free agent.
Or go to the final like you did.
You got to win. No.
Right.
They want GMs and coaches want winners on their team so that they can, that those players can help them get there and get through it. They don't want guys who are in second place, third place, fourth place. They want winners on their team.
And so do the sponsors. So do the endorsers, you know, they're.
Put it this way. No coach has stood up in a locker room and went, "Russ Cardinal was in the final and he lost 4-2 to Calgary. Ask him what that was like."
Oh no. Yeah. We're so proud of him. What is there anything missing?
Yeah. But that's when Marty McSorley would stand up and go, "He fucking lost. He's a loser. I've won 3 cups. Come talk to me."
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
I brought up earlier, Russ. What's like all the coaches there, Russ? Now I look at the games. I want to ask you about two roles here: the players, who's the captain and the assistant. I see the C. Let's start with the players. I see the guy wearing the captain and the two assistants. And I stopped the other day and going, what do they do on a team? What? Some people may laugh at me, but I've never really understood, what does, when you got the captaincy, I mean, it's an honor, but what's the role, Russ, say on game day with these guys or during the course of play? What happens with the captain? What are they doing?
The captains just lead usually by example. And, they're the players that the team has given, they've earned the C. And the players look up to them, and they're a go-between. If the coach wants to talk to anyone, he talks to the captain talks to the team, the captain talks to the coaches on behalf of the team. So really good mediator. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is there a bunch of that goes on, Russ?
Usually when you're winning, there isn't a lot, but I know that the coaches sit down with the captain and the assistant captains before the season. They go over the travel, they go through the whole season. Okay, here, we're thinking about doing this. We're thinking about doing that. What do you guys think? What do the players think? And so they act, as a representative of the team. And then the captain, like Bob Gainey, Gretzky, Mark Messier, they were,
those are good
captains. They're the guys that shut the door and go, we got to fucking wake up here and we got to play harder. Or we got to do this or we got to do that.
Okay.
And they're that person that can affect how the team goes either way. And the coach doesn't need to say anything. So, cause we look up to those players. And, I remember Mark Tenorti was our captain in Minnesota and Dallas. And, Shane Cherla was an assistant captain, and Cherla said something to us. He stood up in between periods and he was bitching, and I wasn't an assistant, and I said something back to him and embarrassed him. Like, shut the fuck up. I didn't say it like that. I just said, bullshit. That's crap. I disagreed with him and I embarrassed him in front of the whole team. And I was like second in team. There's Medano, then me were the two top scorers on the team. And I felt like I had a voice, even though I didn't have an assistant on my jersey, an A on my jersey. So I said something. And after the game, Tenorti, he's a big freaking farm boy from Alberta, tough as nails and a great guy, great teammate. He came up and he said, Russ, you don't have an assistant on your jersey and you shouldn't have done that to Charles. And if you had a problem, you should have taken him aside and not embarrassed him in front of the whole team. And I felt like shit. So after the game, Chuck and I are in the, Charles and I are in the shower after the game. And I said, Charles, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you. I was like pissed off, da, da, da. And he was in freaking tears. Like, cause we're super close. We're really, really close friends and teammates. Right. And he was like so upset at me, rather than beat me up, he was all teary eyed and was like, oh my God, I felt even worse. So the captains and assistants really have control of the locker room and they lead the locker room. And whether you agree or disagree, they're the leaders of our team and they've been chosen to do that. And
right.
Unfortunately, I kind of stepped over the boundary of opening my mouth. Thought I could, and I probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, so that's something learned for me. So the coaches go to the captain, and the captain goes to the team, or vice versa. The captain goes to the coach.
Yeah.
On the team. Were you ever in the room, Russ? Is there ever a time when you think back that coaches came? Obviously, they address the players often. Would they ever sort of throw something out to the team, Russ, say, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing, and I want to take a vote with all the players or something? Does anything like that happen, or these coaches don't do that sort of thing?
The only thing I experienced where it was a vote was in Montreal, and we voted on who was the next captain. And when Bob Gainey retired, we voted on Guy Carboneau. It was anybody. You could pick anybody, but the two two obvious choices were Guy Carboneau and Chris Chelios, and they tied. So the vote was split 50-50. And
is it secret vote, Russ? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. You write down who you want. So it's not a show of hands, and you write down who you want to be the captain. So I think Brian Skrulin got a few votes, so it kind of screwed up the voting system. So I think after they said, okay, Chelly and Carbo got the most votes, so let's vote on them. And then we voted on them, and it was 50-50. And other than that, there's, you know, it's a dictatorship. The coach and the coach tells the team what the how things are going to roll, but a lot of coaches and go to the captain and say, this is what I'm thinking. And they have a personal relationship. And so the player, the captain can go to the coach. The coach can go to the captain. But as far as voting, the only voting I ever saw was okay, which captain and frick which restaurant we're going to eat at.
Speaking of roles then, Russ. So 3-4 guys now coaching behind the bench and a bunch of guys up in the rafters. And I'm sure that must be way different than when you played. I mean, you're not that old, but you're into a long time now since you've played. What are they doing, Russ? What are the two other coaches? Let's say there's two other assistants behind the bench. What are they doing during the course of play, Russ, that the head coach can't handle?
Well, it's simple. It's simple. Gary Bettman, he started the, let's make the NHL great again and create jobs.
Oh, okay.
I was with Coop and his not
his assistant coaches are going to be real happy when they hear that.
Well, you always had assistant coaches. You had two.
You're right.
Now you've got tons of, I don't even know how many they have. So when I played, it was, you had one guy on defense, one guy on the forwards, and sometimes it, like, you just have one assistant coach behind the bench and one eye in the sky. So he'd be telling them what's going on, what they're seeing. So there was either one or two assistant coaches behind the bench. Mainly, I think it was mainly one throughout my career. Mm-hmm. And so there was three coaches, and then we started having a goalie coach. So there now there's four, but the goalie coach, did he come on? He might have come on the road, but I'm not 100% sure because I didn't pay attention to that. But had no say in the game, or he was there just for the goalies. Now, you know, then you got the video guy.
And did you have video when you played, Russ, back then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The video was big. It was big, and we would break down the PK, the penalty kill, the power play, regular shift, and they would put together a video before every game, and we'd watch 5 minutes of each. So the penalty kill would go in the room and watch 5 minutes. This is what their power play's doing, and we're to react to that power play. Power play, go in the room after. You'd watch the power play guys, we'll watch their penalty kill and how they're reacting to how they kill. And then we would have the whole team in there, and it was like, okay, this is what they're doing. And you'd have a clip that he would have had clips from the game before of, you know, what breakdown, you know, their breakout, their forecheck, and some highlights. And so you had three sets of video. And you watch that the day of the game, sometimes in the morning, sometimes right before the game, before you go up for warm up. And when you were on the road, you usually watched it in the hotel. We'd have a snack right before we'd go to the rink, and we'd have tea, coffee, and some a little bit of light food. And that's where we'd go over all the video right in the banquet room of the hotel. And then we'd get on the bus and go to the visiting team's rink and get ready for the game. So video was always big. There's just so many guys now that, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Too many, Russ? Are there too many coaches?
I mean, I'm far out of it that I don't know. It just seems like a lot of guys to me. I mean, just seems like to me, it seems like too many, but I don't know.
Not to mention analytics guys and nutrition and all this other shit.
Yeah.
Speaking of coaching, Russ, I wonder if these teams and these owners are onto a new thing. I want to ask you about interim coaches, because we hear it a ton, right? Because of Rick Bowness, who's the interim Dallas coach. If I own the team, this is a hell of an idea. I don't have to sign a guy to a big contract. I'm going to make him interim and see how he does.
Yeah, but that's been going on for years. It's just the media now has blown everything out of proportion. Everything has to be analyzed. So whenever a coach got fired and they hired a guy from the minors or the assistant coach, they were an interim coach. They just didn't make this huge, they didn't put a title to it. And then if he did well, then they would sign him. And if he didn't, they would be searching in the summer for a new coach. So it's been going on for years, because if you fire a guy in the midseason, you need somebody to run the bench.
Right.
And then if they do well, you sign him, or you sign somebody in the off season. So it's been going on for years. It's just people are, you know,
nothing to do with cash then. Nothing to do with trying to save money.
Well, obviously you don't want to make a mistake. You don't know if the guy's ready to start coaching. You didn't know. No GM knows that, oh, December I'm going to fire my coach. It happens because what's evolved from the season. It's thrown into their lap. They're the shits. They blame the coach. They fire the coach because it's easier to get rid of a coach than get rid of 10 players. So they get rid of the coach. They're not going to sign another guy for 3 or 4 years without knowing, unless he's like the best coach available and you got to sign him like tomorrow. That's happened too, but you just buy yourself some time to figure out what you're going to do.
Right. Interesting stuff. A little shout out here. Okay. Big listener, Carson Polgard. He emailed me and said it would really mean a lot. I said, I'll do that for you, Carson. No charge. We started a thing, Where Are They Now? A while back, which is totally interesting to guys our age. We're finding the big demographic of the show is sort of men 40 plus, you know, is one of the big ones. We got all sorts of people listening. I sent you a few rosters, Rusty, and I was flipping through them. I said, have a look at these guys, Russ, and let me know what jumps to mind when you see a few of these guys. I sent you the 93 Minnesota roster that you were on, the 89 Montreal team with the guys like Bobby Smith and Chris Chelios is on that team, Mike Keane, Ryan Walter, Matthew Schneider, and then on the 96 Rangers, Luke Robitaille was there, a bunch of other guys. Where are they now, Rusty? Is what I wanted to ask you. Some of those guys, when you look at it, we want to know what jumps out at you there.
Well, an interesting thing, player, Ryan Walter. I played with Ryan in Montreal. Ryan is a Christian, played in Washington, played in Montreal, won a cup there, and then Vancouver. And he was a big fisherman, loved to fish. And he and his wife, Jenny, have a camp. It's one of the islands off Nanaimo, between Nanaimo and Vancouver. And I think it's Thetis Island. And Ryan has a getaway. So he's a motivational speaker. So you can go to his camp or his home or whatever you call it and stay there. I think it's for 8 people, and they cook healthy and they hike and I think they fish. And then he's a motivational Christian speaker.
Oh.
Yeah. So Wally's been a motivational speaker since the day he retired.
Yeah.
So interesting that he's doing that. And then another guy that I played with, Pat Flatley, we played on the 84 Olympic team. He and Kerry Wilson were our stars and our first
Islander,
line.
Right? Flatley, most of his
career. Yeah, Flats and captain of the Islanders. He and I, so we played that together then, and then we ended up on that 97 team in New York on the Rangers together. And what a great guy. And he and his brothers started the Great Canadian Bagel Company.
No, they didn't.
Oh, yeah, they did. The Great Canadian. No. Yeah, yeah. And they called, and they, in the U.S., they were the Great American Bagel Company. And he goes, well, what? You know, of course, the Irish boys, you know, invented the bagel. That was a standing joke. And the last time I saw him was in Toronto years ago, and he and his brother were developing commercial real estate. Really successful guy, really smart, great hockey player, and just a fun-loving guy. He's a guy that you want to sit down and have a beer with.
Right.
He's got the Irish blood in him, so he can he definitely loves his beers. And a lot of
great guy.
A lot of good times with him and Glenn Healy, our backup goalie. The three of us hung out in New York together, and we might have frequented a few pubs together, the three of us.
Right.
So we had a they were great, and they were teammates in on the Islanders together. So they had a past, and then ended up on the Rangers and
right
and so on. So anyway,
Glenn Healy had a good career, color guy for years.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Now he's the head of the NHL alumni.
I never knew that.
Uh-huh.
He's
the president.
I hear that. This is a great segment. I love this. When you talk about Pat Flatley getting into commercial real estate, one of my favorite stories was the Rat, Linsman. Kenny Linsman, who was one of the most laid back guys. I traveled with him one time to Hawaii for a wedding, and Kenny was great. You know, Kenny was great, and he taught me many things, Rusty. many things, and. Talk about a laid-back guy. And this guy, very early in his career when he was playing, he started investing in real estate.
Oh.
And he is through the roof. Which he lives in the East. I think he lives in Connecticut or something, a big surfer. But one of the great success stories that you hear, particularly in guys who played back when you did or even before your time, where they didn't make much money. And not all of them were smart enough to do other stuff. But... great stuff. Yeah, what a nice story. Pat Flatley.
The Rat. My brother played with him in Boston. So Jeff played on a line with Cam Neely and Kenny Linsman. And during the Monday stock market crash, I think it was in 87, the crash of 87.
Yeah, something like that.
The Rat called up... Jerry Cheevers and said, I won't be at practice today. Oh. And he's like, why? And he goes, cause I'm buying all, I gotta be on the phone. I gotta buy all these stocks that are, you know, undervalued. They're all crashing and I can't be at practice. My brother called me. He goes, you won't believe it. Kenny Linsman missed practice today so he could buy stocks in the market. I mean, we were worried about how much beer was at the pub and how much, you know, should we go there? No, let's not go there. It's too expensive. Let's go over here. We were all worried about our saving money on the on meals on the road. And he's,
this guy's managing a stock portfolio.
Yeah. What the hell is that?
Yeah. And dirty, huh?
Oh, my God. He was mean. You did not want to go near him and his stick because... Man, he would give it to you. And then he always had someone freaking massive behind him who couldn't put a sentence together, but was freaking tough as nails to back it up. But Kenny was a tough son of a bitch. And he's a great guy. He's a big surfer and interesting guy. He wasn't your regular hockey player. He was out there and a very successful guy also.
Hilarious story out of Tampa. A fan named Devin Garnett, who's in fact, he's such a big fan of the Lightning. They profiled him on one of the news shows to talk about how crazy he is as a Tampa Bay Lightning fan. Steve Stamkos comes back, as everyone knows, scores a goal in like 8 seconds. He hasn't played since February. Of course, he's a big gunner for Tampa, and he comes back, and then he gets hurt. Like, I don't know, 10 minutes later.
Wasn't that crazy?
He's gone. He won't be back. I mean, the series is almost over, but This Devin Garnett guy is at home when Stamkos gets on the ice, and he starts to scream to shoot, you know, like stupid fans yelling at the TV. He's yelling at his TV. He's going, shoot, shoot. Okay. And then screams out, I dare you to shoot.
Yeah. Okay?
All his windows are open.
Yeah.
A neighbor hears it and calls 911.
Oh, Jesus.
Thinking something.
And there's a gunfight.
The guy says, here's his doorbell ring. He shows up there. There's 9 cop cars at the front door. And he says, come on in, you know, and they're going, the cops are freaking out, you know, and they all sat down and he explained to them, you know, let's watch the game, you know, and the cops end up laughing their head off. And, did you ever meet Joe Montana?
I have. Joe, actually, his son dated my daughter, Allie, for a
shut it. School.
Yeah. So Joe moved to California or moved to our area and put his kid at Oaks Christian, Nick Montana. Right. You can look him up. Nick ended up playing quarterback at Notre Dame. So Nick played at Oaks. And so obviously Allie, Nick went to school together and he would come over to the house once in a while. Really nice kid. Had a few beers with Joe over the course of a couple of years. I can't say we're buddies or anything, but you know, we've met. I met him through Gretzky. So it was Trevor Gretzky, Nick Montana, Will Smith's kid was on the team. It was quite the football team. Yeah. And drew huge crowds for these games to come see Nick Montana play.
Right.
And, so Joe was in our community for 2 years and, I met Joe a few times.
Well, I got a story about him. Actually, I forgot about that because Trevor Gretzky, who's hilarious, who's very funny, he went to that school, Oaks Christian, and he decided that he would wanted to play quarterback because he's got a great arm.
Yeah.
And he said, I wish my dad, who knows everybody, would have told me that the year I'm picking to play quarterback is the same year Joe Montana's son is picking to play quarterback. And that was the end of his career.
No, actually, sorry to
jump in.
So he was Nick's backup quarterback, and then Nick graduated, and then Trevor was going to be the head quarterback, the first quarterback the next year.
Right.
And then in the first game, he injured his shoulder or elbow, I can't remember, and didn't play that year. But it was a stepping stone for him. So he was the backup for Nick, and then was going to be the head quarterback and then got injured. So
our high school games, Russ, I was a linebacker in high school in grade 10. The biggest crowd we had, I think every parent showed up. So we had about 22 people watching our high school game. Is that, is that a little smaller than what goes on there?
Yeah, during the
high
school game? 7,000 to 10,000 people. Friday Night Lights. It's fun.
Yeah, anyway, listen to this story. What happened to Joe Montana in the last few days? He's at home with his wife. He's a grandfather. And their grandchild is there with them. They're sitting around, and someone, a girl, breaks into their house while they're there. There's a back door open, and runs into the house and snatches up the grandchild. I'm not kidding here. I'm not making this up. And starts to run around the house with this guy, trying to get out, and runs into a room. And Joe went in there and wrestled the baby back from this kidnapping. Jesus. It was a kidnapping. Mm. And this story popped up today. I'm like, you've got
to. Yeah, it was in Malibu.
Oh, okay. So you knew that story. Yeah. Anyway, everyone's safe. And they found the girl a few doors down or a couple blocks away. And
Malibu's an interesting place. A friend of mine, 20 years ago, a homeless person broke in and stabbed them to death or shot them to death. I can't remember exactly what, but Malibu is interesting because you've got a homeless population. You have no security.
In Malibu, there's a bunch of homeless there.
Oh yeah. So you have homeless people that walk the beach or walk the street. And it sounds like this person had some mental health issues and you know, these homes aren't vacated. There's people, you know, they're weekend homes, they're summer homes. So these people, it happens in Hawaii also, they just
they want to get a shower. They want to break into these homes and steal food and whatever. But I've been to a lot of homes down there, friends that have homes down there, and anybody can walk up on your back deck and they can walk up to your front door. And so there's some issues down there, but there's no security because it's just on the main highway, the Pacific Coast Highway. So I'm assuming this person walked into the house, and I'm just guessing, but probably has some mental health and drug issues, and walked in and probably grabbed the baby out of,
you know,
I hope there's nothing more to the story than that, but that's what I'm assuming, because
it doesn't sound like it was a premeditated thing.
It doesn't sound like
an organized kidnapping.
No.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. You know, you think you have problems, and everyone talks about the life of the celebrity and, you know, how, you know, it can't be that bad for you. You know, you made tons of money, you're rich, and you got a beautiful wife and all that stuff. And then talk to one of these guys when they're concerned. Daryl Cates, you know, the owner of the Edmonton Oilers. I had dinner with him one night. We're at the same table. I know him. I've known him for years. You know, he's an Edmonton guy, of course. And he started talking about the fear, the absolute fear that he has, and he's worth billions, that his kids would get kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And he was being raw about it. And when I heard that, my elevator just dropped, because I have kids and you do. And I'm going, I just can't imagine living with that stress, you know?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You know, it's not all gravy, man, to be a celebrity. And, you know, it's not quite as great as you think it is all the time with being in the public, you know?
Yeah. I think anyone who has kids, when you get a call from one of your kids, you know, the first 5 seconds is like, okay, are they okay?
Are they okay? Yeah, it's awful, eh? What goes through your mind?
And then you can imagine if you're a celebrity or you're somebody who has Uber money, Uber cash.
Right.
And their worries go beyond that. Or are you okay? You know, is somebody going to try to do something to them, or, you know, take them? And so I understand that from...
Sure you
know,
would.
There's, yeah. But then I understand. I get that as a father of three children. But I also think that people, I've been really lucky in my life to meet a lot of famous people, a lot of wealthy mm-hmm. people. And I think some people just bring it on themselves with the security and all that. Like, it, you know, there are people with
like over the top,
wealth,
you mean?
And yeah, well, they just know they freaking have security guards, and they're drawing attention to themselves. And, you know, the average person doesn't even know who the fuck they are. And then they're like, why are all these four guys like walking around with sunglasses on and guns, and, you know, who's in the middle? And people start looking for who is the person they're protecting versus I met this guy in Maui. And I Googled him, and he's worth $4.5 billion, a Russian guy. And he was driving around Maui by himself or with his wife, looking at property. He rented a place on the beach in a hotel. I had dinner with him. There was no, if he had security, I didn't see him. Maybe he did, and maybe they were hiding somewhere. But I swear, when I walked in, I kept thinking, okay, Russian guy, $4.5 billion. There's going to be like Russian guards around. There was none of that. Right. So I think that some people bring it on themselves. And once you're afraid of something, you're afraid. So if Daryl's afraid, you can't take that away from him.
Right.
But when Daryl travels with four guys in black suits and they've got guns, I mean, not everybody in the world knows who Daryl Cates is.
Right.
Everybody in Edmonton might, but you leave Edmonton, chances are nobody knows who he is.
I was, I get what you're saying. That's interesting.
But you can't take that fear away from him. And if he has that fear, he has it. You can't erase that.
Regardless, right?
So in his mind, having these guys around, that is his protection and his safety, blanket, and he's like, and it makes him feel better. But if you weren't Daryl Cates, but you had the same amount of money and you didn't do that,
right,
you could live a normal life.
Yeah, and I know his son is a wonderful kid. His son.
Yeah, I've met them. They're a really nice family. They're super really nice. I toured him around Maui when he was there, McKenna, I mean, and
yep.
He's a super nice guy. His kids are really nice. They're respectful. Gretzky's kids are really good friends with their kids.
Right.
I've not heard anything negative about Daryl. Nothing.
But that kid has a guard with him 24 hours.
Right, right. Yeah. But that's because of Daryl, not because of the kid.
Right. Right.
Daryl's afraid for his kid's safety. And that's what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take that fear away from Daryl, but there's people wealthier than Daryl that don't have security guards.
Right. I'll tell you why celebrities do need security guards is because of people like me.
Yeah.
I'm in Toronto, drunk, at a restaurant with some buddies, and I look across the floor, and there's Mariah Carey, okay? with a guy, right? She's sitting at her table. It's kind of a booth, and the two of them are side by side looking out at the booth, you know, away from looking out over the crowd. And I mosey on over, right? Rusty, on a bet, okay?
Oh, God.
One of my buddies, it would have been a guy like you who's going, I sucked me into some bet. If you get over there and sit, you know, if you sit at the booth and you can last more than 30 seconds or something, or I said, I'll do that, you know, I'll do that.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, off I go, right? I sit down and slide into the booth beside her, right? And she sort of, you know, pushes her head back and go, can I help you, right? And I said, I'm a huge fan. You know, I'm a big fan, Mariah, and I just wanted to say hello. And those are my buddies. Do you mind waving? Okay, that was something like this bet.
Yeah.
And she sort of does, but before she finishes waving, I get the full vice grip, Russ, around my shoulder, okay? All right? I get it on the right shoulder. I think I get a cramp, right? And then on the other shoulder, and I turn around. And not only did I not have a chance to turn around, there were two guys, one on each shoulder, and they just picked me up and dragged me out of the booth. She had security, but they were sitting across the floor from the restaurant. And so I understand why they had security. It certainly worked.
I saw a picture of Bill Gates standing in line in Seattle for a hamburger all by himself. And,
oh, no kidding. Yeah.
And I don't know if he has security or not, but imagine if he does, we would never see them because it's, you know, one of the wealthiest guys in the world. But right. I thought it was cool that he was just there was a picture on Instagram, Bill Gates waiting in line in Seattle for a hamburger and French fries.
Yeah. I did that in Sherwood and I was in line. And I went, God, that guy looks like, you know, I said, God, the guy in front, I said, you look exactly like, who was the guy who had the show in Hawaii? Was it Magnum PI?
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck. And I tapped the guy on the shoulder. I didn't know, you know, I said, God, you look exactly like Tom Selleck. And he said, I am Tom Selleck.
Jesus.
At that little Starbucks down from your place there. And anyway, Rusty, great show, man. I love this stuff. We come to each and every week and love to hear from you. You can email us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And we're going to get to some of you. I didn't have time today, Russ. I got a ton of emails. I'm catching up.
Jeez.
And we're going to go over those next week. But thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And enjoy the game. When we record this, game six is about to happen. So, Rusty, every 2 years I start betting again. So I went on Bodog. And I started flipping around to look at odds for the sports, you know, because the NFL started.
Yeah.
And I said, maybe I'll play a little video blackjack. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a blackjack guy when you go to Vegas, you play blackjack.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a $10 a hand guy. Okay. When I play blackjack. So usually I can bring a couple hundred bucks to the blackjack table.
Yeah.
And if I'm betting $5 or $10, whether I win or lose, I can last about an hour.
Okay. Right.
Normally, right? Because if I win $200 or $300, I'm quitting, usually, if I have the discipline.
Gotcha.
I started playing video poker, Russ, and I said, I'm just going to play $5 a hand, okay? Or video blackjack. Okay. And then I thought, you know what? You can play three hands at the same time. In Vegas, you can't do that. You have to have a minimum $100 bet to play three squares. But in video blackjack, you can play three squares with any amount of money, dollar to it.
Right.
So I started doing this, Russ, okay? And I thought, you know, this is, I'll go low here. I'll just play $5 a hand, three hands at a time. I did the math, Russ, okay? Uh-huh. And it takes 8 seconds, okay? So watch this, Rusty. I throw up the $5 bet, vrink, the three hands across, and then they go, you know, and then you go stand or hit stand or go to the next thing. So every 8 seconds, Russ, I'm laying down $15. Okay. So let's say it's 10. Okay. So that is every 10 seconds. So I'm going 10, 20, 30, and 15 times 40, $50 every 30 seconds. So I'm laying down $100 every minute.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you play for an hour, I'm actually laying out bets $6,000. Okay. Rusty, it happens so fast. Oh, I'm just like, it's just crazy. Anyway, I got my ass kicked.
Yeah.
I got my ass. Yeah. Shocker. The cooler they called me, Russ, as soon as I showed up.
Oh, my God.
But I learned my lesson, and I won't be doing it for another couple years again until I want to go
for
back
another 6 seconds.
Isn't that crazy, though, how fast you can?
Oh, my God. When I'm playing in Vegas, I'm trying to slow it down. You know, like when you're getting things aren't going well, I'm just trying to slow
it down.
I've
been there.
Too slow. Yeah, I've been behind you. Been with me. And when you're winning, it's like they can't deal the freaking cards fast enough. Get that 8 seconds down to 4 seconds.
Yeah. It's because I remember walking, you know, that little privé lounge where we all hung out at the Bellagio. Yeah. And I always knew, I finally learned, just walk by, Jimmy, the hallway before you step in there, because you were gambling with your brothers.
Yeah.
And just wave and wait and see what happens before you walk in to be funny. And so they go, hey, Rusty. And if you turn around and go, beat it.
It means keep walking.
Or Jimmy, get in here!
We're winning!
We're winning, baby! Jump on board. We're winning. Speaking of winning, you've been listening to The Suspendables, and we'll be back next week with another show to talk about this and much, much more. Take it easy, Rusty.
See you, bud.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.